one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of his relationship to Krishna is not complete in his renunciation. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1225-256. A Krishna conscious person well knows that everything belongs to Krishna, and thus he is always free from feelings of personal possession. As such, he has no hankering for anything on his own personal account. He knows how to accept things in favor of Krishna consciousness and how to reject things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. He is always aloof from material things because he is always transcendental and he is always alone, having nothing to do with the persons not in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a person in Krishna consciousness is the perfect yogi. Om Ajnanam Trimindasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshunantam Yene Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Namaha. Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesh Shunyavadi Pashacha Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So once again, we are on chapter 6, text 10. A transcendentalist should always engage his body and mind and self in relationship with the Supreme. He should live alone in a secluded place and should always carefully control his mind. He should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. So this chapter 6 is on Dhyan Yoga, meditation. One of the ways that we can link ourselves to Krishna. Yoga means to link. So linking the soul to the super soul. And if you read the verses before this, Krishna is talking about the qualities of a perfect yogi. And in text 10, he is really telling who is the perfect yogi. He starts gradually and builds up. And in the text 10, he says, a transcendentalist, when he engages everything, you know, we have three bodies, right? Physical body and subtle body and the spiritual body. So the soul, so we have the, he's saying is the body, mind is a subtle body, mind, false ego and the intelligence, and the self, which is the soul. When all three are engaged or are always engaged in the service of Supreme, then he's a perfect yogi. And he should live alone in a secluded place, should always carefully control his mind, and he should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. The question that comes up is, Prabhupada in his purport, first he's talking about that person in Krishna consciousness is automatically a perfect yogi, and he goes through the explanation, and we will do that. And then the reason that Prabhupada is giving why a Krishna conscious person is a perfect yogi is the fact that yoga means to link with Krishna, to be constantly thinking of Krishna. And unless one is in Krishna consciousness, one cannot be a perfect yogi. And so what does Krishna consciousness mean? And therefore Prabhupada is quoting this very famous shloka. The Rupa Goswami Maharaj has given us in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which says that basically it's restating the shloka. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna. And when one rejects everything that is not related to Krishna, then he is a yogi. Now, the other things that are talked about in this verse is, if you take a look at it, is Krishna saying that one should stay in a secluded place. And he should be alone and should be free from desires and feelings of possessiveness. Okay. Now, the question comes up is why of all the things that a quality that a yogi has, why is Krishna talking about these three things? So what is this about? He should live alone in a secluded place. Why is Krishna saying that? Because when you think about it, that goes almost contrary or go ahead. Yeah, that's true. To be aloof from the... But... Yes? And I was thinking what Prabhupada said, that, you know, we should chant, we should do sankirtan, we should... Isn't that true? You Mataji? Huh? Yeah. So, Prabhupada, and that's the sort of the beauty or the amazing part of the Prabhupada, that he gives us a very practical definition. I mean, when you take a look at it, in Nectar of Instruction, I was thinking about it, he talks about a person who is, that many people do manvrat, many people take a fast, a vow of not talking, right? And how does Prabhupada deal with that in Nectar of Instruction? You remember? He said, many people, there's a ritual that says in the Vedas, again, to control your mind, because one thing we all do is talk, you know. And that comes in our way, and so many people say, okay, I won't talk. So they just do a vow of silence. They won't talk for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. But are they really not talking? Huh? Rami, are they not talking? If somebody says, I won't talk at all, right? And he says quietly. And does that mean they're not talking? Prabhupada says that inside, they're constantly talking. That as soon as this thing's over, I'm going to go and talk to so-and-so. Same thing like Prabhupada says that the reason we do Ekadashi fast is to think of Krishna. But if all you're thinking is, well, when the Ekadashi will be over so I can eat, then it's not fast. Because eating comes in our way of thinking of Krishna. That's one of the activities that we do at least 2 to 3 to 4 times a day. You know, and many people do it all the time. They're just chewing gum. You know, it's like a goat. You know, and they just the goats do that. And in the old days, when I was a kid, I mean, my grandfather, my father mother saw me. You know, my mouth always. You know, and they say you're like a goat. You're just always, you know, doing all this thing. This chewing gum is a very recent phenomenon. I mean, your mouth gets dirty, your teeth are, you know, all those things. Anyway, so you're constantly thinking of food. And so similarly, if you take a vow of silence, so Prabhupada gives a very unique way out of it. He says, however, if we are constantly talking of Krishna, constantly either doing shravanam kirtanam, you know, if you're constantly hearing and chanting, or doing sankirtan, then it is same as a vow of silence, because we are being silent from materialistic, nonsensical, worldly talk. And same thing he says, I can read a couple things, I mean, he has given lectures on it. Yeah, he focuses on that. He said, living in a secluded place, and in fact he starts with that you cannot really find a secluded place nowadays in the world. You just cannot. The Chinese are almost ready to build a train track all the way to the top of Himalayas. They have opened a train, they have put the tracks that will go all the way up to 22,000 feet, which is what, about 7,000 meters, and the Mount Everest is about 9,000 meters. So they already have a railroad track up to there, and you can see this, the train chuk 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 chuk, you know, going all the way to the Himalayas. Sometimes people go in the old days Himalayas to have silence and peace, and now they won't be. A lot of people are up in arms that the Chinese should not build that railroad thing. So, same thing, isn't the Prachetas who did their tapasya underneath the water? Right? Now you see all the ships and submarines and all those things going all the way into the water. I mean, you have the Eurostar that goes underneath the sea. So I mean, there is no escape. There is no escape. And so there is really no seclusion. So that does that mean that one cannot be a yogi? Who said no? What that really means is that we are secluded, like you were saying and you were saying and back there, is that we are secluded from jansanga, nectar of instruction. That we should not associate with worldly minded people. They are with their talk, with their desires, they're going to distract us from Krishna. And therefore, Rupa says a secluded place in nowadays is a Hare Krishna temple. Or going to a dham, a pilgrimage. Pilgrimages, they come in a secluded place. And that's been happening for ages. After people retire, they just pack up their things or not pack up their things, and they just go to, Prabhupada writes, Haridwar, Mayapur, Vrindavan, so many places, Rishikesh, Mathura. So these are considered secluded place, secluded from the world. Because Vrindavan, Goswamis have said, that is Vaikuntha. They're secluded. That is not from. They are part of the spiritual world, and that is the objective of a yogi, is to be in a spiritual world. So, the Vaishnava Association, the Sadhu Sangha, is also it's like living alone. So there we can see that the process that Prabhupada has given us is a process to become a perfect yogi. Without all the constraints of sitting, as you see later on in text 11-12, that somebody will give lecture tomorrow, sitting in with your half eyes closed and nose like this. Yes, any question? Oh, you're doing it. Okay, so I won't talk about it. anyway, so you can see, we can take, I guess, Jano Sundari is not here, we can take yoga classes and go through that training, which is okay. No. But Prabhupada, he's always said that I'm giving you the fastest way, the most direct way. And so the most direct way is that you come in and, you know, Mangal Aarti and Gaura Aarti and all the Aartis and all the Sankirtan, and you just chant and dance. And that is a perfect yogi. So that's one thing. The other thing that Krishna talks about is this, he should be free from desires and feeling of possessiveness. And see, a perfect yogi is Krishna conscious. And a perfect yogi means he has no desires, or he does not possess anything. Now, we have said this before also, you know, Prabhupada says, no one can be without desires. Only a dead stone, rock, is without desires. Everyone, from the ant to the human beings, to elephants, tigers, they all have desires. Take a look at an ant. They have this desire to have sugar, you know, 24 hours a day. I mean, I guarantee if you take one particle, or what do you call it, one grain of sugar, and put it right here in the middle of this temple hall, and it's so clean, somehow a ant will come and take it away. Prabhupada said you can put one grain of sugar on the tallest building upstairs in the Empire State Building, and the ant will find its way with all the elevators, everything else, all the way that he knows that on the 110th floor of Empire State Building, there's a particle of sugar. So it's an overwhelming desire. And so Rupa Goswami, recognizing that, we have an R sannyas, or R renunciation is yukta vairagya. Again, we renounce anything that is not connected to Krishna. And so if we connect everything to Krishna, then, I mean, you know, this thing like in English, you can have your cake and eat it too, right? That you make a cake and you all can eat it. And that is only possible in Krishna consciousness, and you can be God conscious. See? And that's what we do. We make all these nice, big, nice feasts. We offer to Krishna and then we just eat it. You see? Because on the other hand, we say, no, you should not go to a restaurant. You should not overeat. You should not, you know, do this and do that. And that's what when the ordinary people who are not in touch with Krishna consciousness, when they first come to the temple, they say, yeah, this thing doesn't make sense. I mean, these people are having the best time of their lives right over here, you know. And it's because we are putting everything in relationship to Krishna. And that, in some ways, that is then free from possessiveness. It's like a small child. He's so free. But he can have anything he wants. He goes to his father's closet, mother's closet, and pulls things out. Because he's carefree, but he knows everything belongs to my father, and I belong to the father, so I can take anything. You see? So there's no question of me or mine. It is the same thing. You find this thing when I... it's getting less and less, but when I did the Brajmandal Parikrama, that you know, the 1 month circumambulation, the whole Mathura mandal takes about 1 month, and we used to go at the parties of 100, 200 devotees through these small villages, and sometimes to go from point A to point B, or like maybe the road is all broken up and there's you know, water, everything. So we just, without even thinking, we just go into someone's house, you know, in their yard, and then go out like that, and people didn't mind. Because the average villager in Vrindavan thinks that this property belongs to Krishna, so everyone has a right to walk through it. And in fact, there was one devotee from Pennsylvania. At the end of the parikrama, we give our realizations. And he said, you know, for 30 days, we, without any discrimination, we walked through all people's homes, they welcomed us. He said he did not see a single sign that you find in the West. Beware of the dog. The people have these big houses with big yards and fences, and they put a big sign, beware of the dog. They don't want anyone to come in. Huh? And here, these villagers who have nothing in some ways, and we're walking through the houses. Again, it's a consciousness. In one case, everything belongs to Krishna, so everyone has a right. We all are Krishna's children. And they're saying, no, it is mine. So that villager also has his home, and the guy in Pennsylvania also has his, you know, castle, but is the they both possess, but one does not possess, and the other one, you know, has a different mentality. So that is, so Prabhupada said that, therefore, in fact, Prabhupada was always, I think it was in Australia, when he came down off the plane, as he got into Rolls Royce, or after he came to the temple from the airport in Rolls Royce, there's a reporter there. But he said, you know, you talk about this giving up everything, and here I see you are driving in a Rolls Royce. This is actually, you can look it up. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, you know, I am the representative of the most richest, you know, person in the whole universe. What do you expect me to do? You know, if the president of or the governor general of Australia came in, you think he's going to come on a bicycle? You know, and so he said, I'm representing him. He said, I'm concerned, I can walk. There's absolutely no reason. But here I'm representing the president of the whole universe. So that's what I'm doing. So it is, and that is, so if we stay in Krishna consciousness, then we have this nice sort of we automatically, I guess what I'm trying to say, we become the perfect yogi. It's a matter of dovetailing our desires to with Krishna, and so we can be we can be free of possessiveness and free from desires. So that's the other thing. Let's see. Now this thing about living in a solitary place. Krishna actually is repeating that several times. Here I have in my references, if you go to Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, text 11, Krishna talks about that, about living alone. And also in text 52 of chapter 18, living in a solitary place. In fact, Prabhupada writes that, I've taken from Narad Bhakti Sutra. Actually, Narad Muni also talks about it in his Bhakti Sutras. I was able to find a reference here through the Vedabase. And Narad Muni also talks about this. Let me just share this with you. Come on. Narad Muni says, Yo vivikta sthanam sevate yo loka bandham Unmulyati nishtray grune bhavati yo yoga shemam tyajati. So he's saying here, translation, Narad Muni, who can cross this illusion? And he says, that person who stays in a secluded place, cut off at the root, his attachment to mundane society, becomes free from the influence of three modes of material nature, and gives up a hankering for material gain and security. Almost exactly the same thing what Krishna is saying in this shloka. Now Prabhupada, or actually the devotees who wrote this, Prabhupada didn't finish this Narada Bhakti Sutra, is neophyte devotees, however, are not advised to live alone. Although solitary bhajan was practiced by Namachara Haridas Thakur and sometimes by Lord Chaitanya, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur criticized devotees who prematurely wanted to chant in a solitary place. He wrote, My dear mind, who are you so proud of being a Vaishnava? Your solitary worship and chanting of the holy names of the Lord are based on a desire for cheap popularity. And therefore, your chanting of the holy name is only a pretension. Prabhupada quotes this in the Krishna book, page 882. So, we come from a line of Goshtanandis instead of Bhajanandis. The two types of Vaishnavas. One are bhajanandis, you find them in Vrindavan and other holy places, just sitting in one corner and doing their bhajan. And our process is Goshtanandi. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita at the very end, I'm really very pleased with those who go out and give this message. So that is not possible. When you take a look at through the entire Gita, like you were saying before, that he's telling Arjuna to fight. But what he's saying is, you fight thinking of me. Krishna doesn't say, you think of me or you fight. We always say either this or that. But no, the thing is and. You fight and you think of me. And that's the process that Prabhupada gave us. That we go out, you know, on Sankirtan. We give the book, but we're also thinking of Krishna. We're doing our rounds, and we're also doing our service. So that is the process that is the process of a perfect yogi. Yes. Desireless, it is not possible to be desireless as long as we are living. But Krishna almost so many things that Krishna has given an impossible task. Krishna is saying be desireless. But then, everyone knows, as long as you're living, we have a desire. So take care of that. So what you do, you make your desires same as Krishna's desires. And then we become desireless. Any other questions? Yes. All the wine, the vineyards, and the grapes. Yeah? Yep, exactly. Exactly, that's what I said is, if you stay solitary, you're going to do all nonsense. And therefore, our Shastra says, Prahlad Maharaj says, Chaitanya Maharaj said that you can have all the wealth and all the seclusion, you know, everything which is on one side, and one moment of association with the Vaishnavas. That is much more valuable. So, whatever happens, never leave the association of devotees. In fact, the only hankering that is allowed is the hankering of the association of devotees. Otherwise, hankering is in the mode of passion. Lamenting is mode of ignorance. Hankering is the mode of passion. And we are supposed to be in goodness. And therefore, but hankering means desire. So we hanker. We are humans in certain ways. So we hanker for association. And therefore, you see how devotees, this recent trend of having kirtan melas. It's really fulfilling the desire of association and the hankering, and we're hankering for the holy name. Because the world is getting more and more, people want more and more this, more that. So there's the media, the paper, everything, TVs is really constantly saying, hanker, hanker, hanker. And we do get influenced, but then we are taking care of it by going to Kirtan Mela. Yes. Goshtanandi. Goshta means goshti, ishta goshti, being together in a group. Bhajanandi is generally bhajan you do, like when you do japa, you like almost by yourself. That's what it's a technical term. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? So we'll do the true association with the holy name. He's here, Zimbradinga. Okay, Hari Bol, Hare Krishna. Mula Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Hari Bol.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare.